Two things I'd like to cover in this session together with you. The first part is a little bit maybe on the theory of learning, how men learn. And the second part are some points on just how to put together a team, or how to work with men, how to get a band of men pulling together and for a common objective. Several years ago, I don't even know if the date is on here, I don't believe it is. Yes, it is. March 1961, in Nation's Business, was an article entitled, Eight Steps to Better Training. And in the article, the concept of coaching for the business world is brought in. And it's taken from a book, How Adults Learn, by Dr. J.R. Kidd, K-I-D-D. Publishers of the Association Press. And out of this, I gleaned these concepts. There are eight of them, but I felt that these five basically were important in working with men, because this comes up over and over again in teaching, coaching, athletics, putting together a team. Actually, you teach during the week in training, or in practice, and you coach really on Friday night or Saturday during the game. Coaching is more of putting together a body of men for a common purpose, whereas teaching is just the hand-to-hand combat, either by verbal talk or by illustrations or by movies, by pictures, so forth. But these are the five points I felt really had significance for us in our sessions in these mornings. Point number one, a person tends to be committed to an activity or procedure. A person tends to be committed to an activity or procedure to the extent that he is involved in planning it. A person tends to be committed in almost in a ratio to the extent that he's involved in planning it. Now, this is real important in leadership, isn't it? That decisions don't just come down from the top, but you get your, particularly your inner core, and how do you feel about this? Remember, Lauren yesterday mentioned Doss, when he was asked by Billy, he got his key men and gals together, and how do you feel about the NAS getting involved with Billy Graham? We had some guys that didn't agree, and they left the work. And boy, they really produced a schism. And they tried to produce a schism. I feel they were wrong, because this isn't scriptural. And still today, the Overtones in Dallas Seminary, these fellows had to be attending school there at the time, are there because they just felt that the NAS were committed to individual evangelism, not mass evangelism. We're after the man, not the men. But Dossie, you see, brought his core in to get them involved in the decision. And if we're doing this together, then it the implications. If I could just share a practical illustration. Last summer and early fall, we here at the Glen made a decision for a NAV development program. We did not bring the area men into it. We made the decision here. Then we asked the area men to go along with us. Well, it's been a rough year because they haven't understood. They weren't involved in the planning of it. Now, Russ gave it full blast when went back to the Midwest. But you see, if he had been here last summer and been in on the initial plan of it, then he would have been committed to it in a far greater degree months before. You get the point? Same thing as I mentioned yesterday. When we decide that in this particular game, rather than a rushing game, we're going to use a passing game, we better get the assistants together, we better get the quarterbacks together, the captain, And on Sunday and Monday decide that this is going to be the strategy. And why? So that from Monday through Friday in practice, there is commitment because all of our hearts have felt that we were in on the plan. Once again, read Crusade in Europe by Eisenhower. My, how they couldn't, of course, share a lot of things, but they tried to get it down as far as they could to the grassroots to get everybody involved so there would be commitment. Point number two, I'll read these slowly, but you want to get all the words down. A person tends to be motivated to change in his behavior as he sees rewards. Rewards of new behavior are greater than the change. See, all change tends to be resisted, huh? The older we get. We just don't. Therefore, there has to be application. I mean, in the Christian life, the motivation would be as he sees himself becoming more like Christ and conformed to the image of the Son, then his change will be greater. This is the reward. We all, with open face, beholding in the glass, are changed from glory to glory, even by his Spirit. Now, in the field of athletics, rewards is a tremendous motivating factor. And I don't think people are going to do a STS or advanced ABC just to be doing an STS advanced. You see, the motivation, the rewards. These are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, and believing you might have life through his name. I remember talking to an attorney in Rockford, Illinois, 45 years of age and never read the Bible. And he could discuss religion. He could discuss the theory of Christianity. He knew nothing of the book. But he was motivated that Sunday afternoon to read the Bible because he saw the results in the lives of people he knew who had read the Bible. And if the Bible and the Christ of the Bible could do this for those people that we talked about, then it was worthy of a change in his behavior pattern. The change would be searching the Scriptures to see whether these things be so. Now, with children, we hold out an ice cream cone, don't we? We hold out a second helping of dessert. At Christmas time in our home, we used to have pudding. It's an old English custom, I believe. It wasn't English pudding particularly Mother would make, but she'd take several rolls of new dimes and pour them into the pudding. After it had fairly settled, formed, gelled. And, of course, the more pudding you ate, the more dimes you had. Well, that was a tremendous motivating thing for several weeks before Christmas that, now, remember, you're not going to have much pudding unless you do this. Well, I was tremendously motivated because I loved that pudding. That was the most delicious pudding because, you see, you wouldn't eat the dime, but... You just go back for seconds and thirds and fourths and just see how big a stack of dimes you could have sitting there. Not a bad idea, huh? But this is one way we learn, by rewards. And in the Christian life, boy, the Lord holds out rewards, huh? The crown of life. Boy, the soul winner's reward. Just the joy of knowing him and the privilege of making him known should be a tremendous motivation. Why do you memorize Scripture? Why do you spend time in your quiet time? You're not up to meet a habit. You're to meet a person. And this is the thing that drives us to do these things. Point number three. A person tends to be willing to accept influence of others. A person tends to be willing to accept influence of others as he sees others willing to be influenced by himself. Reciprocal training. A person tends to be willing to accept influence or influences of others as he sees others willing to be influenced by himself. Oh, in coaching, this is a real key in learning. Is you take a fellow who is an end, and you try to outfox the secondary between halves, you have to completely change your strategy. Oh, we'll just leave it right here. I'll hear it. Well, you sit down in the locker room at halftime, and you say, Charlie, what seems to be the problem? Now, I can tell him, but how much better if I'd say, well, Charlie, do you have any suggestions? How do you feel we should adjust our pattern? And by the way, this is Christian living, constantly adjusting to meet the defense and the problems of the day. Life is not static. Now, Satan will see to that, won't he? He's a faithful adversary. And people change. The same person is different every day of the year, practically. And you just kind of have to keep shifting. Charlie, how do you feel? Well, he's going to far more be interested in what I have to say if he senses I'm interested in perhaps his suggestion. Take an end here, and he's got a defensive halfback down here. Well, maybe he's been going this way, but this fella is faster than he is. Charlie says, well, coach, I think if I had button hook, it would work. Well, the quarterback has to know that. Button hook. You know what a button hook is? Girls don't know what a button... What is a button hook? Now, forget football. What is a button hook? Huh? Remember, our mothers would reach through the eye, grab the button with this hook, and pull the hook back through? Didn't you ever see one of those? A button hook? How many of you girls have never seen a button hook? Forgetting football now. Land of Goshen. Well, you know what a button is. You know what a hook is. Well, a button hook is a hook that reaches through the eye, grabs the button, and pulls it back. Well, that's what we say in football. When you button hook, you just go down maybe 10 yards and then hook right back. And it's a time play, really. It's a sequence of seconds. And right about here is when the quarterback throws the ball. And, of course, he's got to know whether you're going to button hook to the right or to the left. So that ball comes, and of course, what you're doing, you're charging down, and the halfback, he's retreating, and all of a sudden you stop and turn back, and that's the button hook. Now, aren't you glad you came to class this morning? I'm glad you did, because you girls didn't even know what a button hook was. Well, the point being that if I, as a coach... 2 Timothy 2, I don't know, something, 2-something. 2:24. The servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, and so forth. I mean, it's just the idea that we don't set up ourselves as lords, and we've got all the answers. But particularly in adult learning, The interaction of others with your men or with your men. Learning together, I guess that would be it, huh? A man who thinks your ideas are good is a man that you're willing to listen to. Because if he listens to you, he must be intelligent. And if he's intelligent, he's worth listening to. Real important in teaching and in learning. Some of the best ideas I've gotten in Bible study have come from those that I've done Bible study with. Little off-the-cuff ideas, you see. And this is where prayer comes in. This is where the Holy Spirit, you see, gets in. Here's a man. Well, let's use a fellow like Newkirk. And Newkirk came and wanted to work with us. This is during the Korean War, and I said, Nuke, I said, there's no place for you. I don't know what you could do. Why don't you try Youth for Christ? They're always needing extroverts. Well, he came back. Well, would you give me a chance? So he sort of was the janitor there at the service center. and did dishes and folded the tracks and kept them in the racks and just did the menial things. Now I begin to pray, well, the Lord, maybe he's the guy that, you know, you want to have work with us. So here's the guy up here, because that's sort of the way he looks. He's sort of a square. And here I am down here, and I'm looking at him. My problem is that I cannot really see him, so I have to get God in the middle of it, you see, and see that man through God. And this is where prayer comes in. I mean, you take Ed down here. Well, I don't know Ed. Look at him. Talk to him for a while. Now, Lord, you know Ed. Do you want him to come and live with me? Do you want him to put his shoulder up against my shoulder and we'll pull together on this project? Lord, am I the kind of guy that can help Ed? You know his needs. You made him. Your Spirit's indwelling him. Some guys, it may be weeks and weeks you'll pray over, and you ask him to pray. And he'll pray backwards, you see, through God. But this way, you get the Spirit in there, huh? So that it isn't just your mentality being able to pick out, you know, there's a winner. There's a guy. Now, in coaching, we do the same thing, only it isn't prayer. Where are the 11 fellas? It may be, you may be a halfback and you get together with your assistants and you sit and think. And you figure, boy, he's a good halfback, but I could really use him at tackle. But what's this going to do? There's some guy that's been playing tackle for 2 years on the varsity. And if you put this guy at tackle, you're going to have to put that guy on the bench. I mean, this is the same philosophy you use. If you saw the NCAA basketball champion from Kansas City, you saw UCLA do this very thing. On Friday night, they put in a little Negro boy. What was his name? Not Livingston, but Washington or something from back in West Virginia someplace, went out to UCLA. Just a little jumping jack. And the coach benched a regular, for this guy had been sitting on the bench practically all year. But the coach sensed that for this particular situation, here was the boy. Just that sort of that sense. And boy, if you know that this little kid won the game for him, 20, 25 points. Well, you translate this into the spiritual realm, and this is what we do. We pick our men through prayer. I don't think Paul just went through Asia Minor and some guy said, Paul, I'd sure like to be in your MBI. It's Mobile Bible Institute. And, yeah, well, come along. I need somebody to keep everything in shape. No, I think Paul spent time with these men. You read the opening verses of the 20th chapter of Acts where he lists these men that are with him. I'm sure they were prayed over men. Almost every letter. Every Pauline epistle either starts or ends with a prayer for them. You take the great prayer of Colossians 1. My goodness, I'm sure that he not only prayed these for churches, but he prayed them for men. Remember one night, a bunch of us were praying in Long Beach. And all of a sudden, I got tremendous concern for one of the guys we were praying for. And I forgot who it was I took with me. And we started visiting practically every tavern and every bowling alley in Long Beach to find this fellow. Well, it was through prayer I got the constraint. I couldn't have cared less. You know, well, if that's the way he's going to go, let him go that way. We need faithful men. Now, I felt that George had the quality of being a faithful man, but we had to get him out of that environment. And somebody had to, when he was down in that drunken condition, go in there and pull him off that stool and from around that barmaid. You know, almost every time I'd go into some of these bars, you guys been in Long Beach, you go into the Saratoga and some of these places, and you don't exactly feel at home. But we're looking for George. And I wasn't looking for George because Foster wanted to look for George. The compulsion of prayer. And when I'm talking about picking your men through prayer. It comes right down fast to the second point. And that is, develop for this man a heart of love. I suppose, gang, we could take the rest of the time and just talk about this. I think this is the key of man to man. You've got to love men. I mean love in the right sense. A God-given love. This thing that binds your hearts together. The thing that David's men had toward him that would cause them to go down into a hole and fight for him. The thing that would cause him to go out of the cave to get him a drink of water. And David couldn't drink the water. He poured out as a sacrifice to God because he saw the love of men. This is where loyalty develops. Not because we're the navigators. What would they think? Boy, love transcends organizational bounds. The love of Christ constrains us, huh? Or they tell me that the Greek word there is the love of Christ overmasters us. We do things that we wouldn't do because of love. The great 15th chapter of Luke. If I had 100 men and 99 of them were with me in a Bible study, I don't think I could care less about the other one. Pretty good batting average, 99, huh? Boy, the cozy comfort of the fellowship of the 99. But what about the one lost sheep? I don't think it was materialism that caused him to go out. That stormy night, I think it was love. And there's a lot of things that you have to do if you love. Now, if you really love them, you'll do a third thing. And that is that you'll prune them. John 15. Because the husbandman has an interest in more fruit. He cuts back. And he whacks off. And he reduces to size. Speak the truth in love. Oh, Ecclesiastes 8:11. That unless sentence is exercised speedily against evil work, men's heart will be given more and more to evil. I mean, it's hard to keep short accounts with your guys or gals. Pride enters in. But what will they say? The timing isn't right. Well, that may be true. But you know, we throw up all these resistances rather than just getting up and going down the hall or going down the front room or whatever it might be and just saying, Charlie, how about it? Let's get this thing squared away right now. If I'm wrong, I want to apologize. If it's your fault, if it's your mistake, let's get it squared away so there's nothing between us. And boy, this has to be done in love. Turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 12. Oh, beginning with verse 5, down through verse 11. This whole concept of chastening. Now, chastening and discipline are two different things. Discipline is the purpose of pain. Chastening is the fact of pain. I don't think that's just words there. Discipline sees the end result. Chastening is just the fact of it. And so in verse 11, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness. And this is where Dawson was at his best in working with men. He could really discipline. But he'd do it in love. Now, sometimes you didn't always just see the love. And boy, is there anyone here who feels like it's fun to be disciplined or have somebody square you away? It's never, if you're rebuked in front of a group, if the coach reads you off, if he stops the movie and sees, "Sir Foster, see you there? You missed that block, and because you missed that block, we didn't score the touchdown. And for my money, you lost the game." Oh, that's not easy to take. Pride. And yet, to do it in love. Another verse I put down, Proverbs 23:13. "Withhold not correction from a child. If thou beatest him, he'll not die." Sometimes they think they're going to die, huh? Sometimes when you get through, you feel like your hand will never come back to normal again. Remember, we had Dave Morgan's children with us. I don't know, Carrie, if you're living with us then or not. 509. And a couple of my children were really cutting up, showing off. And we had all Dave Morgan's, three or four of them there with us. Plus our own household of umpteen number of people. And I had reminded my children that that would be the end of it. But, you know, you stick them into gear and put the throttle down, and they don't have the discipline just to knock it off. And they just kept on going. So I just got up from down the end of the table and went and got Bobby and Jen, and we went out into the garage, and I just took my belt off and really let them have it. Do you know, to this day, the Morkin children still feel those beatings, because they know that my children took the welts because they were helping to instigate it. And their children today are grown and graduated. And whenever I see them, one of their boys, Dave, was our speaker here last summer at staff conference, and had a couple of children with him, and they still reminded me of it. They did it for the moment. Oh, I came back to the table, they were bawling just like I'd beaten them. Mine weren't bawling, because if they bawled, I would have spanked them some more for bawling. I'll tell you the sequel of this story. Jana, I don't know which one it was anyhow. Let's say it was Jan. She's a girl. She had misbehaved, and I had to do this several times, and they knew I took my belt off. And so she had misbehaved, so I took her off her chair, and we started out of the dining room. The dining room at 509 was just a mammoth thing, maybe a quarter as big as this room, just huge. And so it took quite a while to get out of the room, and so as I was going out of the room, I was taking my belt off. And they just go out of the door, and Bobby, oh, "Daddy, with your belt gone, be sure your pants don't fall down." Well, you know, how can you spank a kid, you know, when you're laughing, you know? And, of course, the whole table went in the uproar, you know, and trying to hold my pants up. And well, that was a case where there was joyous. Luke 9:55. Christ was the master of the soft rebuke, was he not? He could be stern, he could make a whip of lashes and drive them out of the temple, which was his house, his father's house. But here he turned and rebuked them. And I'm sure he did it with love. Oh, I mean, there was steel there. I'm sure that his eyes weren't laughing. But you can love somebody. And if you don't love them, you won't discipline them. You discipline because you love them. Luke 22:31-32, how the Lord rebuked Peter after his bold, rash, self-made statement. Boy, when Christ says, "Get behind me, Satan," it's quite a rebuke to your head honcho. Now, fourth thing I try to do with men, and that is I try to put him to work. Now, I'm convinced that men learn by doing. We can sit around in our monasteries, you know, and our holy houses, and we can have Bible studies till they come out of our ears, and we can have seminars, and I believe in all this. I believe that if you've got a band of men, you ought to have a key men's meeting every week. You ought to have prayer meetings with them and Bible studies. It's talking about Nuke. The thing I began to see about this kid was that on Monday nights that he never missed. And he always had his Bible study, always had his verses. And the guys that I thought were the faithful men weren't. So I began to put the squeeze on Nuke, and I found out that he responded. And one day I said, Nuke, how about quitting your job and coming over and putting in full time? Oh, I said, I've been waiting to hear that. I said, well, now, wait a minute. You remember you've got a wife and a couple kids. He said, boy, they'll respond. And sure enough, he did. And, well, it's just that by giving Bob something to do, you see, he began to show his mettle. And he began to show what he could do. A lot of fellows can memorize a lot of verses, and they can do a lot of Bible studies. And they can have a real sharp, smooth notebook, but when you get them out in the battle, then they can't use all that. They can talk a good battle. But you see, we need men not on the parade ground, but we need men in the trenches for God, huh? But don't just send him out, take him out. On alternate weeks, the guys in the service center, we would go after civilians. Because I was convinced that these guys could witness to servicemen, but can you witness to a self-sophisticated, heady college guy or at Long Beach State? It's a different breed. So we take the guys and go over there to see what we could do over there. Or out on the streets with older men. Go over in the city park and talk to some of the derelicts, some of the has-beens. Take them up to the Veterans Hospital. See what they could do when they're talking to a guy who's laying on a bed. Given up. Hasn't got a leg. How do you witness then? See, we tend to be specialists. My groove is the college student. Well, how about 10 years from now when you no longer communicate with a college kid? This is one of the great problems that Young Life faces. This tremendous turnover of leadership because they lose that touch with that teenage kid, and they can't keep up with them. And then their family develops, and the responsibilities at home, and organization, and they can't spend the time on the campus. But they've been so grooved in, you see, to reach just a specialized age. I like to see guys get to work in an infinite variety of situations. Same thing for you girls. Don't just take the easy ones that come knocking on the door, the smoothies, the sharp ones. Why don't you try some detention home for gals sometime? Why don't you go down to some of your probate judges and ask for an opportunity to witness to some of the girls who, except for the grace of God, that's where you gals would be, huh? Ask God to give you some of these little high school gals. Boy, that'll trim you down to size. You know it, huh? If you've ever worked with them. They'll keep you humble. And they'll prove the reality of whether you've got it. I think one of our great dangers in the Navs, that we sort of become selective of who we're going to work with, who's going to be on our team. And we forget that the fields are white on the harvest, and this is what God is interested in. And he's always wanting to stretch us. And then we always come back, you know, well, that's not my gift. That's not my field. How do we know? I suppose in coaching, it would be delightful if you could just pick the guys that you want, but particularly in high school. Boy, you choose the guys that come to that high school. And you mold a team with what comes out for practice. Now, you do us sometimes good in the spiritual realm, huh? This is where prayer comes in. Lord, you give me the men. Lord, I don't want a Judas Iscariot. I don't want a doubting Thomas. I don't want a loudmouth Peter. We've got too many brothers already on this team. Imagine having 3 sets of brothers on your team. Boy, just getting them out there to work. Soul winning, I don't know what you call it. Don't be afraid to call. I think we're afraid of some of the terminology of the Bible. I don't think we have to
always be so careful to update it so everybody understands it. I believe in being contemporary. But don't just shy away because somebody has said, well, soul winning. We're not interested in their souls. We're interested in the totality of the personality. Well, I am too. But I still believe in soul winning. I believe in personal evangelism. I believe in preaching the gospel, whatever you want to call it. And I want my men to do that. You know where love will really show up as you work with your men and your gals? How much time do they spend with their babes in Christ? The very thing that we say is our strongest point, often as it gets down to the second, third generation, really dissipates and waters out. Follow up. And this shows who's got the heart for people. Parental care. It isn't easy to take a guy and baby him and love him and care for him for months and months. Guy probably closest to me for years. Went out. Blazed out, flamed out over in Japan for the Navs. Married a Japanese girl. Unsaved girl. Heathen. Didn't even believe in God. Lauren Lilly came back to this country, disillusioned. Absolutely shot down. His home church in Tacoma would not receive him. Just gave him the brush off. Well, the easiest thing for me to be stay right here. Well, those are the odds. Those are not the odds. When I walked in that steel mill over there in Southern California, I said, Lauren, let's get together for prayer and see if God wants you to come out of that steel mill and let's start working together. I took upon my responsibility a young guy. So I hopped onto an airplane here a few years ago. What, $125, $130. Went out, got a motel room. He hadn't married this girl yet. She was still in Japan. The Naz had asked him to come back. Said, Lauren, come on up and spend a few days. No, don't want to. Said, come on up. We're going to go out and see the Dodgers play a ball game. Okay, I'll do it for that. If you promise not to want to pray or quote any Bible at me. And I says, I promise. And for 3 or 4 days, I did nothing but just, we drove around, went and saw things, ate, talked. And at night, we lay there on our bed, and I'd talk to him, and I'd try and get him open up. That was hard. That's hard on me. I'd rather be back here. I have more fun talking to you all. See? But he's my responsibility. And you've got some guys the same way. Now, it's a long, long road for Lauren to come back. He's working out in Los Angeles, trying to learn to be a plumber, going to night school. You just don't claim 1 John 1:9. Yeah, he's claimed it. But there's a lot more involved than that, you see, because you just don't disannul or walk out on a girl when you've married her. She's his wife. And they got a little Japanese girl. Well, I know if Lauren is ever going to do a thing again. I told Lauren here a couple months ago when I was out, Lauren, I'm waiting for the day when I come back out to L.A. and you say, Bob, come on down to my home. I've got a little Bible study of a bunch of guys. I want you to meet some of the guys I've led to the Lord. I said, Lauren, that day's going to come again. Because if there's ever a guy that led guys to the Lord. There's guys today in the Lord's work, all over. Maybe some of you guys that Lord influenced in your life. He's going to come back. But somebody's got to love him, huh? Somebody's got to be his dad, his mother. I got 4 children. There's nothing that they could do that would cause them not to be my children, huh? They could go way off the deepest end, but he's still my boy, my daughter. He's bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And yet we take these spiritual sons of ours, we take these guys that are on our team, as if they're numbers, you know. They're things that we sort of play with, we manipulate. And it never gets into this old heart. And consequently, we never get into their hearts. And this is, well, coffee break time. Let me just give you the last point. Pace set for him. In other words, don't just tell him. Do it with him. You're acquainted with Philippians 4:9, huh? Those things which we have learned and received and heard and seen. I like to put it that way. Those things which we have together learned and together received and together heard and together you have seen in me do. In every area of life, the etiquette, the making of the bed, there should be such personal identification with you and your men that when these men come to Glen Eyrie, just by the style of Bible study and their heart for evangelism, we can say, hey, you're so-and-so's son, aren't you? We do that in the physical, don't we? It isn't just that they look like it, but they talk and they act and their mannerisms and their interests. Because Dad has been pace-setting. And that's the old with him principle. I don't think it's so strange. I was looking up in my old coaching record books. Should have brought one along. But my last 2 years, I spent on an average of 15 hours a week from the middle of August till the middle of November individually with my quarterbacks. 15 hours a week just to help a boy learn to call some signals. You know, I bowed my head. I said, Lord, forgive me. I haven't had a man in years that I spent 15 hours a week with individually just to help him to be a producer for God. Well, what does that add up to? For it's God that worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Philippians 2:13. God, as the coach, taking us as raw recruits for whatever we are by the grace of God and making us into something for his glory.